members, ladies and gentlemen, you are welcome this morning. The Portfolio Committee, as you all know, that we have huge tasks. Ongoing work, oversight work, trips overseas, Agri World Cup, a lot of things that we are doing. Therefore, this morning, as you all know, that there are a number of forums before this between DCW, somewhere I think in 2005. And we have a film in publication somewhere in, I think, 2005, both of them. And last time in the Portfolio Committee, as we attempted to have some kind of an understanding of the action taken based on the recommendations from the Forum, we've given some kind of a presentation, but we have to set up meeting. At the same time in that meeting, we need to adopt the report of the human competition and government treatment, the annual report. Therefore, this meeting today will be to really focus on the issues raised in the political and get a kind of a progress report on the action today that the most part the record of that with the intention, obviously, the intention for us to be able to talk to us and to understand that. We had a problem with human development, a lot of things we need to take up to know. We spend money, in fact, in calling for this problem. And after that, the report comes in, and there's no action, nothing to do. But I know for a fact that they can do some kind of progress in both human publication and government shooting when from time to time the recommendations of the application. Therefore, members, can we then afford the opportunity this morning to human publication, not on human publication amendment bill, but on the forest report today this morning. And welcome to the leader. I understand that you have left now. You have not even said goodbye to the Portfolio Committee. So therefore, today will give you an opportunity to say thank you very much for your work. So on that note, let me afford the CEO, the Shoki from Mongupate, for his presentation. And then we'll ask members for questions and clarities. And then from there, once we're done, we'll then move on to government treatment on the same issue. Thank you very much. Yes,
cover the background of where we are at, what the key findings were in terms of the forensic investigation, the recommendations that it included, as well as what process they did. Basically, in 1995, when I came into the Criminal Publication Board, I subsequently requested MNM consulting to conduct an investigation into certain allegations of mismanagement and irregularities in the management and administration of the assets of the Criminal Publication Board. This was mainly stemming from the audit series and of course the qualified report that we had at the time. Following that, we then had key findings and recommendations that MNM consulting submitted. Some of the key findings were, for instance, they speak about the writing of an allowance which was paid in error to the South African Revenue Service. And if I'm not mistaken, it was in the region of 339,000 rand. And then then the second finding was irregularities regarding the conditions and fittings of the sediment fabrication board. This was mainly related to the move from Cape Town to Johannesburg. The third key finding was the appointment of service providers for the launch of the child pornography, anti-child pornography, hotline. The old HR was able to be done. And then there was an issue around the lease, both the main and the sub-lease that we entered into with Kibari CC. The fifth one was the lease agreement. Of course, the main lease agreement was the 7% property, which is the main lease that I was thinking about, that SPD has with both 87% of property, which is the LEPO, and then with which was entered into between SPD and 87% of this, as well as SPD, public works and 87% of this property. Then there was an issue around the purchase of a photocopy machine. Issues generally relating to control weaknesses, issues around travel, cell phone accounts. I'll basically say I think the issues around travel and cell phone accounts are very much linked in with the issues related to control weaknesses. There were issues around further improvements, which were also related to the main lease and all the other improvements that were done. Governance and management issues, organizational culture, budget management, structure and organization of the settlement participation. Of course, MMM made recommendations based on certain limitations, particularly the fact that because of time constraints, the investigations that they did were mainly based on interviews conducted with staff, as well as documentation that they could find that they were presented with at the time. And they did not necessarily go into a rigorous process of verifying what information they were given. But basically, there were four key recommendations that they made. The first one being that we need to institute as a federal publication for the disciplinary proceedings against certain members of staff due to the said regularities. And I think in particular these were two people, it was Mr. Ivor Chetty as well as Ms. Jim Westmore, who at the time were the two executives, senior executives who were basically experts. It tended to focus on them because, from what I understand, at some point for quite a while there was no CEO. So between the two of them, they were the acting CEOs. But they also, in terms of the EXCO, are the people that take particular decisions. The second recommendation was that the settlement publication board needed to approach the National Director of Public Prosecution with a view to consider criminal action against both staff members that were implicated, the two staff members that were implicated, as well as other people that were also implicated in the irregularity. There was also a recommendation that the SPD should take appropriate legal action to make sure that those costs are covered from anybody that would be found to have used money of the settlement publication board. Lastly, the Department of Public Works was also required to investigate the conduct of the landlord as well as the attorneys and agents regarding the conclusion of the lease agreement. If members recall, the issue around the lease agreement, especially the main lease agreement, was very much an issue. It still came up in our audit, and to the point that I need to say that today it still follows us, as was also highlighted in the current annual review in front of the committee, the one that was not adopted last time. The issue of the lease still comes up. What we then done subsequently, disciplinary action mature village, both Miss Westmore as well as Mr. Ivor Chetty. However, Miss Westmore has since resigned last year. Mr. Chetty, the process of Mr. Chetty was actually halted because he had at some point offered that he was going to resign. But then he later, on the delay, he later raised issues, technical legal issues. Especially because at the time we didn't really have policies in place dealing with, well, almost all matters, but in this particular case we did not have a policy dealing with disciplinary matters. So there were technical legal issues about what it is that we could do or could not do in the disciplinary hearing vis-a-vis his labor rights. And subsequent to that, there was a time lapse that basically presented very serious challenges relating to labor relations issues. What we also did is we sent the report to the Ministry for Further Action in respect of people that were implicated, that were in the ministry. We also sent both reports to the Department of Public Works for their further action, as well as public protection. However, I need to say that we did not really get a response from both. But what we did do on follow-up with public works, because we were looking at the option of getting out of the main lease, and of course public works paying half of the rent would then be obviously a major stakeholder. But we were also hoping that they'd be able to assist us in that regard. What we've also since done, we've investigated the option of getting out of the main lease, but from what we have, it was quite a difficult position to get out of. Because for all intents and purposes, the contract that we have with 87 Central is quite restrictive, wouldn't be the correct way, but it's very, we're very much tied into the lease. For instance, it was a 5-year lease that was entered into, renewable for another 5 years, but then there was a clause that said should we not renew after the first 5 years, we would then have to pay an amount of almost $600,000 as a penalty fee to be able to get out of the lease. So that was the clause that actually tied us in. And the decision that we had to make as a management team was whether, with the investment that we had already made in the building, with respect to the improvements, we came to about $1.4 million, which I need to say only $400,000 was actually budgeted for. Put us in a very tight situation. It did not make sense for us to leave that amount of investment and go elsewhere. We therefore opted to rather stay there and rather renovate, which is what we are currently doing, renovate to try and maximize the space that we have. And therefore we made a decision that we would rather than stay at the premises for another 5 years. We've also since then developed various policies and procedures for almost everything, including your travel and subsistence policy, finance policy, cell phone, procurement policies, disciplinary hearing matters, leave policy and all other policies that we require to be able to function and give guidance to the Settlement Application Board in our operations. With respect to the recommendation around getting money, recovering money, we have done the best that we could under the circumstances where we could. The difficulty was the fact that because of issues around PFMA and issues around mismanagement, we needed somebody that had the authority and somebody that had the capacity and technical skills to be able to say, to basically pick up the issues and say, this is what people that are implicated would need to recover. For instance, with respect to one of the service providers that has been quoted, particularly in the launch of the anti-child pornography hotline, apparently the initial amount that they gave as the expense for event managing was around 300,000. But subsequently it ended up going up to about 500,000, if my memory serves me correctly. We have attempted there to get the money, but obviously the person being outside of us, we were very much restricted. But what we subsequently did was that we sent a report through to public prosecution for them to assist us in that regard. We also after recommendation from the board, I went to report the matter to the police on the 9th of May 2007. However, I was told by staff that this was a civil matter and therefore they had nothing to do with it. And it is on that in that regard that I then attempted to get a meeting with higher authority in the Public Prosecution's Directorate, and I need to say that we did meet with them. We handed over the report, and the deputy, I think he's the deputy public prosecutor, has actually promised that he will assist us. We've actually arranged a meeting for this coming Friday for them to be, having gone through the report for him, to be able to say what it is that how we should move forward here. I think that basically that's the progress that we have made. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm going to have the opportunity now to start with Gutman, and then throw the Hosi, and then Sandy, come on much later. Okay, in that line. Let's start with you, Gutman.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Thanks for the CEO for the progress report. A lot of issues were listed, and I think you indicated in terms of handling it. My question is really in terms of your management operations, in terms of your risks. Because at the end of the day, all these issues are risks that have arisen from your day-to-day operations. For instance, in terms of the monthly cycle, I presume there is reports on these issues. Do you discuss it on a monthly basis at management level? What steps are proactively taken, for instance, to ensure that your contract management, that risks do not, seem to come to the fore, your control weakness? Is there a monthly evaluation? Is there reports to the CEO from the finance side? Just an indication of that. And then, see the second issue, you've indicated your problems in getting proper feedback from subs. You've spoken to the deputy director of public prosecution. Maybe that suggestion, interactions last week, the problem with public prosecution. Won't it be maybe a possibility, maybe to have a live level meeting, maybe facilitated by our chair with the director or the deputy director, and see if we can't get a permanent link, if there's issues coming from whatever source dealing with prosecution, that there is a direct line and you don't have to stand in the queue. That's maybe the suggestion. Maybe your comment.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start also by congratulating the SPP for managing to address some of the concerns raised by the Auditor General. However, Chairperson, to my surprise, in their key findings, most of the issues emphasized by the Auditor General are not included, like tendering procedure. The Auditor General said tendering procedure is not properly followed according to the Act. And the question of job evaluation and all also the question of monetary mechanism and internal control. When it comes to labor relations, the issues settle them. Year in and year out, Auditor General's report shatters and used to raise concern of posts which were not filled in, if those posts were funded. People were acting more than sometimes, despite the fact that the Public Service Act does not allow them. But they are not in the key findings. When it comes to disciplinary measures, I don't know where to start and where to end. On paper, they can be measures. But truly speaking, not FPT alone, or myself as a whole, when it comes to disciplinary measures, we don't have proper records of what is happening. Except the few minorities. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I would like to know, this is the department's response to the findings. Now, where would I find more detail? One of the key findings says appointment of service providers. Now, what is the actual finding? Was it with the actual appointment process? Was it with the selection? What was it? The lease agreement, one has been explained, the other one hasn't. When you say purchase a photocopier machine, what is the key finding? Was it too much money, too little money? Travel, what is the amount we are talking about that has been mismanaged? When you talk about the cell phone account, whose cell phone account, and what is the nature of the findings of this order? If I understand correctly, this report was commissioned in 2005. All right. And again, from 2005 to date, are you saying the department, the ministry has not responded to them? And one other question, who entered into the agreement? Was it the public works that entered into this agreement on your behalf, committing you to the five-year contract and the renewable, clause? Okay, I'll just rest for that. Okay, and in 4.7, you say the matter was reported to the police on the 9th of May, 2007. When was this report finalized? Why did it take so long to report it? And when we say the matter, is it the whole matter, or is it like the whole report, or is it only in the case of Mr. Chetty? Because I see now he's still in our employ, and obviously the time factor, because we took so long to institute action, that has worked against us. What else emanates further from this? And then, Chairperson, just one last thing. I see two persons sitting with the CEO, but they will just introduce themselves so we know who we're talking to.
I apologize, ma'am. I'm with Ms. Kali Samashawa. She's the new office manager in the Chief Executive Office. And then Zolile Mungu is our previous CFO. He's now moved over to Treasury, unfortunately. But seeing that we were going to be dealing with issues of annual reports, we actually have an arrangement with Treasury that because of the time, he unfortunately left at a very untimely time, or this time out. So we have an arrangement that as and when we need him, we are going to be using him. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, most of what I was going to ask is covered. But what I want to know, Chairperson, is that I don't understand clearly here about the disciplinary and criminal measures. Does it mean if a person has made a mistake The only way is to resign, and when that person has resigned, then the case is dead. Because it was said here that Miss Jean Westmore resigned, and Mr. Chetty was also going to resign. Therefore, I think it stopped you there. Nothing was done because of the resignation, which means I can just do whatever I want in a criminal way, and when I see this, I'm caught, I resign, then everything is fine. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Well, it might be maybe a similar question, because of if we say there is this Ms. Westmore who then resigned, we just want to find out if he resigned with all the benefits that were entitled to. Okay. And is there no way that you can say, since we are looking into this thing, was there any way that you can say Mr. Chetty might be maybe suspended up until such time we have finalized some of this matter?
Are we then saying all this filing which was done by these people who were doing this investigation, only two of
those people were involved, only two, not any other sub-member was part of this finding. Thank you.
That there have been questions already, but the floor is yours to respond on the questions that members have asked, in particular the action. And I think you've noted that. Therefore, I think both of you, therefore, and the CEO can sort of do that. But it's up to you, I'm going to, but let me know what I say to you, how you do it.
Around issues on risk management. We currently have a risk management, we've done a risk management assessment. We've actually got a we also have a risk implementation plan, as well as we've since developed a fraud prevention plan as well, and we report on that on a monthly basis in the main core, what we call main committee. We chose to call it management committee meeting because the act is very specific about who forms EXCO, and therefore we report on all the risk-related areas in our management meeting. It has to be part of the CFO's report, audit committee-related issues. I need to just say that my feeling is that we, as we are increasing, obviously inefficiency tends to creep in more. And my sense was we are not really managing our risk as well as we should. And what we subsequently decided to do as a matter of priority, we have said that we will appoint, we initially advertised, we will appoint a what we call a compliance officer. It's one of the recommendations that we've actually had. And unfortunately, at the time, we had somebody internal doing the work. So we subsequently decided that we are going to have a compliance officer, which will be a person who will, on a daily basis, basically run with all audit skills related, internal control issues, supply chain management, and all those, asset management, and all those key issues in which are high risk. Issues around disaster recovery plans and all that. Those are some of the key things that whoever comes in will first have to put in place. With respect to the link with public prosecution, I think that it's certainly been proven to work that when you have intervention from the top, things are likely to go much, much quicker. And I think the bureaucracy tends to be cut. So that will certainly be to our advantage. There was a question on why we have not included key findings of the Auditor General in the report. What I've actually just presented here is I've presented what was in the report that was given by MMMM Consulting. These are the issues. I've basically just summarized what is in their report. If members recall, we had two reports that we distributed quite a while ago. I think it's last year or the year before. There was a thick report, the very intense report that had attachments and all that. But then there was also an executive summary, which I think is what we have distributed, but it's quite a while ago. So we then did not include those key findings of the AG because they were almost, I'm not sure which AG's report we are talking about because we didn't have two.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I think I just want to clarify this issue of the AG's report is the report that we are sitting with of the forensic monitor. One will recall that in 2003-2004, we got a qualified audit report from the Office of the Auditor General. It was this report that formed the basis of our forensic audit because they then raised a number of issues, the tendering process, the issues of writing off the bad debts, and then some other issues. So those are the ones that prompted the forensic audit. So the forensic audit scope was purely to address the AG's concerns. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question that I feel maybe I need to link to this. There was a question on why we were not able to deal with certain matters at the time. For instance, around the issues of the disciplinary processes. I think that will link in also with the issue of resignation of Mr. Ivor Chetty. I think that the latter part of the question was saying why was there no policy. Those are some of the key findings of the AG, which led to the Filament Publication Board, what we call a black report. which led to, those are some of the key findings that led to the qualified report, because we did not have those processes and systems and policies in place, basically. If members recall, my turnaround strategy that I did in 2005 actually highlighted some of these issues, issues around IT, issues around lack of HR policies and general HR management. There were issues around auditing capacity. There were a whole lot of issues that we spoke about and how we were going to try and address them as we turned the government application board around. Maybe just to also highlight part of the reason why the resignation of Mr. Ivor was not accepted was because it was actually a verbal, it was almost a gentleman's discussion. One was naive enough to think at the time that we were being honorable. Perhaps there are other circumstances that at the time subsequently followed that made it difficult for him to accept. But basically because of the lack of policies in place that were clear and that would guide you and say how you're dealing with matters in the board, it made it very difficult when he then raised. I recall specifically what he wanted in one disciplinary hearing to have a legal person. And generally in disciplinary hearings you do not have you can have a colleague representing the person. You basically dictate what kind of form your processes will take, and the lack thereof made it very difficult. He basically got away with saying, I want a lawyer. And that for me was out of the question, and it became crucial for us to give guidance to those processes. Perhaps linked to that, I should... Yeah, there's a difficult question about resignation issue petition. I think here it's important to acknowledge that we should have done more. We relied more on, you know, once the report went to public prosecution, for us you then said, okay, they are the best people to deal with the matter and hope for the best that the public prosecutions would do something about it. And I need to say that not enough follow-up and pressure in public prosecutions in itself probably made them content as well. I do acknowledge that resignation does not take away the responsibility that people have when they were in particular positions. And it's around those issues that the public prosecutions, I have raised those issues with them, and they have said that they will assist us in the most legally sound way. I think that was part of the difficulty. You also did not want to end up in a situation where you land at the CCMA or the Labour Court, and you end up having to pay those people money on their terms that are pending for 3 years. That is money that the Settlement Application Board was not going to be able to afford. So issues around the legalities were also a thorny issue. So we are hoping that the public, in fact, we are almost clear now that the public prosecutor will assist us, because we went to at least the top as far high up as we could. In fact, to the point that I said to the public prosecutor that I'm going to quote his name specifically to say that he has committed, so that if he doesn't, then we are able to follow up to follow up with him. I'm sorry, I have to try and follow because I was jumping around with some issues.
You're saying that you've been given an assurance by the public prosecutor to assist you in this matter. But is there a time left already from the time of the finding to the inner time period in terms of the labor law? How can you be assured of an outcome now if we've already lost the time? You can't reopen the case or reinstitute it. Isn't it legally there's a problem?
It's exactly the reason why I did not want to deal with the matter by myself. I wanted people that I thought were best qualified to deal with the matter. Those are some of the things that we've agreed they're going to interrogate. They're going to look at the legislative framework. But also, issues around criminal liability. I'm not clear in my head about what the civil issues are and what the criminal matter issues are. So to the point that would have to be the basis on which they start. So if there is criminal responsibility, in as far as I recall, there wouldn't necessarily be a prescriptive period. But if you're talking a civil matter, there may be a problem. But it's a whole lot of legal questions. The PSMA, where does it fall? What issues are we talking about? And what issues are criminally, would one have to be criminally liable, and what issues would one have to be civil? So those are the key issues that I wanted them to have discussed with in that regard. And then from there, we'll be able to then come up with an informed recommendation to say, these are the options that we have.
So can I just find out, what's your relationship with the Kumasa? It is clear to me that you're operating this organization, not giving the legal assistance you have in place or legal assistance in place. Therefore, what will the Kumasa do after you have reported? You are forensic, you report to them, which is your principal, and therefore your minister, and the election of Putin, or no guidance was given. This time that the original 2 years down the line that we now have been engaging the public prosecutor at the level that the point that Cindy, I think, is raising that some of these things would have sort of lapsed. I mean, after almost 2 years that the person has already resigned and gone, or is now going to lose somewhere in the in America, and is now going to be chasing the president because of the contract that was not signed correctly. Now, I don't know that the members, does it, host want to come on this point, because it really what it means that you'll find that we're engaging ourselves here for the sake of wanting to hear what were the recommendations, clearly no action taken. Therefore, thank you very much, and that's all. Because it's not clear that we have moved from 1995, 2005 to now, it's not clear that we have moved. Hence, at the same time, I appreciate the effort and the initiative taken by the CEO of the State Office. That clearly, because there was a disclaimer from the beginning, this was for a particular institution called a film and publication, and these are the, what's called, the issues which need more investigation. And the question that Björkman asked about, at what point do you deal with these issues? Are you on your monthly basis sitting and dealing with these issues? And how far are you, if so? It is clear that they're not having this reaction now. And the board, I don't know what is the role of the board in all of these things. Because I know that they see the scrambled egg situation that you see there to deal with in the film and publication amendment on the issue of the board. Therefore, it's a general comment that I'm trying to make, but one thing to understand this relationship with Home Affairs to a point that they have to go to the public prosecutor to ask for help. My advisor is this thing, is it like the PFMA or criminal? I think I see ourselves really, hitting the wrong ones for the direction, which is where this matter has been contained. From the department point of view, so the ministry will sort of contain this thing, deal with it, deal with recommendations, take action immediately, because in the strategic plan in 2005-2006, is that the one where you highlight how you will be dealing with some of the issues as you sort of come in to say is how you're going to be implementing issues that were sort of the witnesses within the film and publication. You yourself confirmed that you were looking at one of the strategic plan of different issues. So therefore the issue will be how far are we in doing. So, but the issue of disciplinary action, maybe we'll just I know that there's quite a list. If you remember very well the treatment which this one was distributed last time. This one. In the last meeting when we did this thing, postponing to the end of this year, this document was given to members.
for members of this committee. Members, this document was made available to members in the committee. Okay, that's fine, members. I've served for 12 years now.
issue still remains labor relations issues with respect to suspending them.
I was just scared. I should have thought about the option of putting Iva on leave. But I was just scared that we had done it already previously. During the investigation, they were actually on suspension for 3 months. And they then came back after the investigation. The reason in there, and they were suspended with pay. Precisely because we were avoiding labor relations threats. But also if you were to put him on leave now and say that it won't be investigations this time, you have to give a basis for putting him on leave. That becomes very easily the labor relations contracted dismissal. You also don't want him to go to the labor court and you find that they said that you've made it difficult for him to be employed. And in any event, his contract was renewed for 5 years despite the fact that he was at a retirable age. So it really becomes very easy to find a basis for saying that we are actually dismissing him constructively and still reinstating the task would completely be broken and you still be stuck with the human.
But isn't this one of the contract renewed when the man is about to retire? Who renews the contract?
I discovered I was actually not aware that he was at retirement age already, but I discovered when I came in 2005 that his contract was renewed in 2003 for another 5 years. I would assume it was the chief executive officer or the minister. I'm not too sure, but I think in terms of the ex, he has to be appointed. The ex has to be appointed by the minister.
You have not come across the contract as a CEO now in office.
No, it's one of the things that I've had to put in place. Nobody had a contract of employment.
So how was it renewed when there's no contract?
There was a letter that was written to pay.
By whom?
Chair, I can just check on that specifically. I'm really not sure. I don't want to give incorrect information.
So you're dealing with the what was the chances of that?
He's
senior legal. Now, so Chetty is a senior legal person there in the workforce. What is he employed for? He's employed through what?
He's supposed to be giving legal advice to the board, I suppose. But in the main, because of the uncomplicated almost nature of what we do, in my opinion, a lot of work that he does is actually related to classification. I would actually argue that 80% of his work is actually related to classification. So if we were to look at restructuring the job, I really do not see a very active role for a legal person, at least definitely not at that level.
No, just a second. Just understand this. Now, in your new whatever structure that you're proposing, the one that needs the 67 million, is it 79 million that you want from government? How are you dealing with the issue of the legal, whatever legal section of your organization? How is it structured? And if so, what is going to be changed around there? Because obviously, if you're a structure, an organization and Chetty has been employed, if the legal system is going to be playing a particular role there, and what's going to be the role? I know the problems that led to this investigation when Chetty had to run a CEO, it was not CEO at the time, it was in CEO, it was legal system, what was the CFO, and he was CFO, he was CEO, he was chairman, he was and we're still sitting with him now. And he still decides what he does. Just give us this new program of what is going to be the what's called K Channel. So we are able to understand which from this program we are moving forward with a new clear plan of, again clarifying each one's position there. a job evaluation, job description, all of those things. You have seen the scrambled egg that we're trying to deal with, because now I see us not going anywhere with your forensic report, other than to say that you missed it, because immediately after the forensic report, this woman reports the next way, and they just carry on this moment. You know, and down the line, fear, because by the way, you know what, you're supposed to take action. You know, and so therefore, I think we just have to have a way of just moving forward on this issue and really look at the future, but make sure that at the same time that those that can still recover, whatever that we can recover, can action them.
Before I just want to find out.
Again, let's take us through the new which chronogram so that I can understand what the process is.
Thank you, Chair. May I just ask, I'm slightly disorganized in my thinking. May I just try and finish the outstanding questions because they keep creeping back to me.
I can see that trying to remember, trying to get this, trying to do this. I can't remember very well, and I can't wait to you. I understand, man. It's not an easy thing. You've been dealing with feeling complicated for quite some time. So, what is it? Because when I still try, you can really try and have you. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Chair. With respect to the last question on the role of the ministry, we did send the report through to the ministry for noting, but of course, and further action. Yes.
When
was that? That was in 2005, Chair. In June 2005. But no, I do need to say that DHA did the best that they could at the time to assist them. For instance, the head of labor relations, I think they call it employee relations, in DHA, was not able to be the chairperson to play any role in our disciplinary hearing for one, for the simple reason that he was actually below Mr. Chetty. So we were trying to get somebody that was qualified in disciplinary hearing matters. That would be able to come in at the chief director level. Those are some of the challenges that we had. But in addition to that, it looked like this guy was really swamped with a lot of work. But on a lot of pressure from the ministry, from the deputy minister in particular, I need to say that one person that was implicated that was in the ministry has actually, well, he hasn't left the department, but he's actually been dismissed. There's a guy that was in the deputy minister's office that was found to have been of undue influence to the process of appointing a service provider, Lion Quarry in particular, the ones that were event managing for the launch of the program. And that guy has since been dismissed. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, he was dismissed in 2000, last year already. Legal services was also really not in a position to assist us because they were equally swamped with work. And I think those were some of the challenges that we faced with respect to getting assistance from Home Affairs. But I also just personally felt that they did not really realize the urgency, and that's why I resorted to trying to solicit help from outside of the film and publication board. Thank you. Okay, there was a question about why only the two executives and nobody else. This was a challenge for us in the sense that when you look at, for instance, frankly speaking, people have asked why the CFO was not implicated in the report. But I think when you look at the development at the time and how the board was running, the CFO was appointed, but Ivor Chetty would still be the person running everything else. And then I need to say, when I actually came in, the practice almost continued until I promised the CFO that I was going to get rid of him. Because he was used to Ivor Chetty bringing documents and saying, please sign here. And he would, you know. All the committee meetings were run by Chetty, literally everything. I think people just did not understand the implications and what corporate governance was all about. And I need to say that I am still struggling today to make people understand what corporate governance is about. There's a very recent example that I need to give to the committee that has put me under a lot of pressure. Despite the fact that I've said to my staff members that members of parliament have raised a concern around how we're paying bonuses, which we have still not paid. They are not very happy. But people still felt that parliament cannot tell us that we can't get bonuses. We worked for this, we performed, we got an agreement, and I think there is in fair point. But I think it's the process of trying to bring people on board and changing the whole culture of how we work and how we function. Those are some of the challenges that you raise, that you meet in that process. But I think people are steadily understanding why we need to work in a particular way and why we need to get to where we are going. So some are just quicker than others. But I really need to say, Chetty as an individual, I think he's come a long way. Having worked where he has, with the years that are behind him, what one needs to do is just to basically manage him and try and give him focus. Ordinarily, he knows what he's doing. He is a wealth of information. And it would really be a pity to lose the amount of information. He's literally a walking museum. Just a question of getting him to transfer that knowledge onto paper. And that is the process that we're now trying to manage. There was a question around the what we were talking about, the key findings that we are just highlighting about travel and sustenance policy and what the key findings were. I'm sorry, but I actually thought that the report, I was on the basis that the report was distributed. But amongst other things, the issues around cell phones. At some point it was found that Mr. Chetty, in fact in both the cell phones and the travel, it was found that Mr. Chetty had almost abused the board's resources. And it is in this instance where I'm saying, where possible, we have actually recovered the money. Because in those instances, you relatively have standards that were almost that are set to be reasonable. So what we've then done, for instance, with cell phones, he paid back some of the money, as well as travel. There's one instance where he was found to have spent a weekend in Devon on the board's money. He has also since paid for that money. So those are some of the issues that we're talking about. And it's exactly for that reason that he could have been difficult, in fact, I'm not going to say, because nothing in the department says I have to use resources in this particular way. But he understood where we were coming from, and it was really very easy to recover the money from him. The disagreement, I must say, is one of our biggest problems. Starting from the amount of money that was spent there, the 1.4 that was not budgeted for, to the way that the contract and the whole dealing with the lease was done. It's got a few sides to it. One of them being the process that was followed, how the service provider was contracted to deal with the whole lease and the move to from Cape Town to Pretoria. this list involves, from what I understand, the list was entered, well, FTB went to look for premises, and they found premises, and they had an agreement with National Video Foundation. The idea was to create some film center of sorts between the FTB and National Video Foundation. And subsequently, the processes were run in parallel, basically. And senior members of FTB are actually saying NFV has followed the process, and therefore they piggybacked on the process. I think by all means, the intentions were noble. They just did not see what the implications, in light of the fact that there were different accounting authorities, what the implications were. And therefore, they worked on the basis that NSVF had done the process, and therefore they had followed the process by virtue of that. Okay. Public Works then came in to fulfill the contract on their part as a public department that deals with property. But then they only paid for a particular amount of money. In fact, it's almost half of the money. And then FTB had to then pay the other half. As a result, that you have three contracts. Public Works and the Nepal, and then Film and Publication Board and the Nepal. But then what FTB went on to do was to then get a sublease. They entered into a sublease with somebody else, but who am I saying has since left the premises. Thank you.
Regarding entities like film and publication, because if I thought maybe the staff is covered by the Public Service Administration Act, am I right, CEO, or not? They are not. So that's why there's no policy with regard to this kind of irregularity.
The CEO was talking about it, but then now he's developed this policy, they have put this policy in there. You know,
thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I just wanted to sort of put one or two things into perspective with regard to the forensic audit. The forensic audit covered the period, the 2003-2004 financial year. Coming back to the question as to why there were no any other officials of the board that were not implicated, perhaps one at this point now needs to state that the CFO position was only filled in as from the 1st of May 2004, which was the new current financial year from the period that was under review there. We need to also to acknowledge that in the light of the forensic audit, we are coming from a culture where there were no corporate systems and processes in place. To link it with the question as to what has happened since 2005 to date in trying to address some of the questions that were raised by the Auditor General, I think a significant progress on that regard was made. We have since developed a risk management framework that we report on a monthly basis against. We have developed policies and procedures. We have revised the procurement policy. We have developed S&T policies, the cell phone policies, in order to address those specific concerns that were raised by the Auditor General. We have also appointed an independent internal auditor firm. We also appointed an audit committee. These are the independent consultants as well as part of then having an oversight on the auditing and financial management issues of the Film and Publication Board. So I think there has been a great progress that we have made in that regard in addressing some of the operational challenges that the board has. Thank you, Chair.
You, Chairperson, I missed the point of how are they going to address understanding.
Thank you very much, Chair, for that point. If one makes reference to the report that is about to be adopted by the committee, I think the issue of an understanding is evident on our the statement of financial performance that we have actually made a deficit during the financial year 2005-2006. So instead, we haven't underspent, but we have overspent due to some of the challenges that we had that are explained as well. If you look at the CEO's overall report, where it explains exactly what is the nature of our deficit, it was mainly because of the unforeseen circumstances that led to the forensic audit, the appointment of the internal audit specialist, the national coordinator, and other three compliance officers for Northwest, Mpumalanga, and Northern Cape. And the other one, it was as a result of the nature of our business. We cannot accurately estimate the revenues that are going to be earned because we're solely depending on the number of submissions that we receive from our distributors. So on that note, it becomes very difficult for us to say for certain this is how much we are going to earn. Thank you, Chair.
Members, are we fine now with your questions? Listen to the report. Therefore, my proposal again would be that this copy must be made available, this copy of this forensic report. And now, I say that the freedom of publication does not have compassion to that. We will as Parliament make copies for all members. Then we receive this on the same. You don't have a problem. The government is sitting on the Parliament. From where I live here, I have this problem. This is a problem. So that what I want to propose is that we make this copy available for members. Because today there's not really enough sense of, you know, having to understand the chain content inside the report. It's going to be difficult to deal with the summary rather than the report. But it's fine. I think members are quite satisfied that the issues have been raised. But some of the things have sort of captured in terms of the kind of responses. Again, when you deal with the report of this nature, you don't have to page by page, which is about 600 pages there. But there's that some other things that wanted to cover areas that need to be understood. Therefore, I think what we must then look at, members, will be one to await the senior engagement with the public prosecutor,
I remember before the contact organizer, we need follow-up to the
program. What we're going to look at the new organogram. It's funded, isn't it? It's anyone being funded, this organogram. Because if it's not funded, according to your requirements now, you're still going to have a problem of implementing the program. So therefore, to me, would be sort of a learned path and first time that you're going to get that they shall be from treasury, but funds that they have prepared is allocated. It would be important, in fact, for the committee to engage with the minister responsible on this matter. On all the issues that have been raised here, I think what we should do would be in our ongoing committee work, we should start a meeting where we invite the deputy minister, because I know that he's still responsible for human publication. We then invite him and look at this proposal that was tabled before Parliament. So the reason that was tabled before Parliament was like to ask Parliament to support us on this new workshop structure that we want to implement. and I remember the call was made that we should sort of try and talk to Treasurer. So what we'll do on our side would be to invite the Deputy Minister of State to engage with him around this issue. And then as we move on, we'll be able, I think, to make our own recommendation of the committee, maybe when we debate, or having to come with a particular recommendation of the committee to Parliament, that Parliament should sort of resolve that the filling application should be given us. Because, you know, you look at the current amendment that you're dealing with, sort of like to bring more challenge to the filling application. And with the capacity that the filling application is operating now, you really have to forget on some of the things that you have identified to deal with in the amendment bill that you're dealing with now. You see, it's underfunded. The people who, I mean, like we've been calling for media and everybody to submit their stories before they publish. Therefore, the challenge will be your capacity, it's only that capacity to deal with that. Therefore, we're going to deal with this issue. But I do not want to preempt the outcome of the filling and publication engagement on the issues that are before us. But I'm raising a very serious concern that a human publication itself does not have capacity currently to be, but the new organogram, if it's not going to be funded, clearly it will have to revert to back where it is. So therefore, there's going to be a need for us to engage further on these issues, CEO. There's going to be a need for us to engage further on these issues. And when we look at the issue of the Auditor General, clearly identified progress that has been made in regards to internal control, and we should really want to applaud you in the sense that you've done quite very well in that area. But the problem is that now that you are leaving, who is now responsible? Either it's as a change again, or responsible for the finances. It's not yet that was shown. It's not yet and now that he has left, have you advertised the post? When are you going to fill this post? So that, you know, there's some kind of a consistency in the whole program that is already has been sort of put in place. I don't hear that coming from the CEO. The issue of the board and it's something that currently in the amendment deals with that issue. As I have said it earlier, that the kind of a scramble egg that we have now, it does not help anyway. You know, it does not help anyway. And my concern again is the manner in which, you know, we deal with these members of the board. I don't see that consistency coming to the committee, you know, in supporting the administration of filming. I don't see it happening. You know, when you look at the Electoral Commission, for example, and you look at the role of the chairperson of that Electoral Commission, and you look at the role of the CEO, and you look at the manner in which they work together. It's such a wonderful. That's why most of the time we don't have a problem with the Electoral Commission. It becomes sort of a wonderful thing when they're both at them here, because you could see that the board and the CEO, which is administration, they work very close together. And with this one, I really don't understand. It's something that we'll have to discuss with the minister of health. The next round, what we'll do will be to develop in our program, as I said, that we invite the minister, but again, maybe both of them, invite them, so that we engage a political around the issues that we identify as a non-functional, you know. Because if the board does not function, why do you report your mandate? You know, and who are making sure that they, you know, on a day-to-day human publication is being played? I think there's a big problem there. Therefore, we want to really, you know, applaud you. I understand. It's in the reason why you are unable to act after you have received the report. Newly appointed, you come up with a huge task of forensic investigation, then you get a report, then you can't move with it. You can't move with it because there are not systems in place to help you to be able to move with the thing. But we're supposed to have got a situation where the board looked at this thing, and this is what the board resolved, and the support we're getting from the board, this is the kind of the support that we're getting from the board. You now go into the public project with the board you are saying to the other. And sometimes we have to resort to relationship, how we say help outside, because it may compromise the work that we're doing. Therefore, we have ongoing engagement on this issue, on this particular area. When we would meet the deputy minister, part of what we must show the community, which is still outstanding, is the visit to the human population board. I think in that was for that's where we invite the minister, the deputy minister, to be part of that mission. And the board. I think it will be quite good after we have sort of passed the human population on governance issues. Not on the issue of exemption, listing of exemption, on governance issues. Well, that deals with issues of governance, which you must look at quite a lot of as members, understanding the challenges that human competition is facing. It was sort of trying to resolve some of the problems that they have in the So therefore, remember, I want us to sort of accept this report and agree that the Chairperson, thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity. Yes, Chairperson. I like your favor, Chairperson, and I accept it. Chairperson, when it comes to monitoring, compliance monitoring, Chairperson, I'm requesting the CEO together with management to address the question of Limpopo and Mpumalanga. One person cannot cope, Chairperson.
Okay, you have allowed me to finalize my response. I know that Limpopo is close there. I think it's not a problem. I think it's true. I think it's part of this new structure that they're putting in place. It's not a self-proven time compliance monitoring. And again, not one person affected. If you get the bomb, for example, you know, the kilometers that the person is running from, if you get the northwise from Rustenburg, you know, from Brest to down to Freiburg, over 600 kilometers that people will have to run from. So as part of the engagement around the filament publication, we need to look at some of the issues that are policy related, that we can make more improvement and encourage them, in fact, to employ more people that they need to be employed and make sure that as a state we provide them with money and necessary service for them to be able to do that. Therefore, members, could be a very difficult day. I program myself when I now summarize. And this morning, sort of shake me back first now. But I understand. Because the point you've raised is the point that they. So therefore, members, without waste of time, having received this report of the forensic audit, because we suspended the adoption of the annual report based on us having to get this report, you know, and sort of some kind of an understanding as to what is it that we are doing with this issue. Now, at this moment, I want to call for members for the adoption of the annual report of the filament publication, filament publication board. Could also have filament publication board, annual report, the 205. Can I move for the adoption of that report? Thank you very much. Then your report is therefore adopted. Recommendation that there will be ongoing engagement around the issues of the forensic audit. And the copies of the forensic audit, the full copy will be made available to members. So as part of your day-to-day work, you need to address the on that note, thank you very much, members, for engaging with the issues. And we'll now receive the second forensic report from Government 21. Thank you very much. I see that Mr. Moyana is there. You are invited to go and participate in one of the most special meetings in the community in the issues of the public government 21 to global. Therefore, I want you then to present your
you're following the report. And members, that time again, many copies are available in my report. Members do have a copy of this report. So therefore, it's fine that you do.
And members of the portfolio committee colleagues from Gibbon Publication Board. It is an honor for us to do a joint presentation on the forensic audit presentation that we are doing today. The forensic audit was requested by the minister in 2005 at the same time as Shoki was doing hers. So it was a coincidental process because both institutions needed to have their houses in order. Chairperson, the background for this audit is based on two issues, financial mismanagement as well as non-compliance of tender processes within GPW and also weak leadership within GPW, both in terms of leadership, financial performance, which was underpinned by three disclaimers for 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005. So you can see from this report that there were serious inherent problems within GPW. When I took over in 2005, it was very clear that the institution was on a roller coaster towards its own self-destruction. And therefore, the minister wanted a turnaround strategy as well as looking into the issues to address the problems that were identified there. The period under review, Chairperson and the committee, was 1st April 2003 to the 31st of December 2004. Now, the question that committee members may want to ask is why that specific period? The minister had a sense that during this period, a number of things were not happening in accordance to the law, and there were some things that were not done in accordance with the compliance of PFMA. And therefore, that was the period before she took office, and therefore she wanted to understand what it is that was going on. And therefore, from my perspective, upon taking this position, I wanted to have a clear slate, clean slate, that I'm not tainted by the problems that had occurred in the past. And therefore, the company that was awarded the tender to do the forensic audit was Kobota Forensic and Investigating Accounting, and they took that position on the 20th of April. So it was 19 days after I was in that position. And therefore we need to spell out what were the terms and conditions for this forensic. One is data interrogation, which meant identification, classification, and investigative regularities that were to say within the organization. Also deal with forensic accounting, which meant review tender and procurement processes, asset management, disposal, and also perform due diligence investigation on key suppliers. And finally, general financial management. And the last item in the date in terms of reference was information security. Review the security, integrity, and confidentiality of information. Review program changes, control, review business continuity. Review EFT transaction and cash payment, and general review of computer systems. I must say, before I get into the findings, this was a very difficult audit for them because it encompassed a period which was very sensitive in the organization, precisely because there were perceived irregularities and which the minister wanted cleared before we could continue the process of compensation. I want to take you back because when I came in, the idea was to take GPW into a new dispensation, namely to have it as a corporatized entity, and that we cannot have a corporatized entity still be dealt by problems that the minister was not sure of. Whether we are running a viable institution, whether there were undue processes which were against the precepts of ethics, and therefore it was important for us to deal with these issues. What were the findings? The findings were that the system, which was tailor-made in 1995, PCAS, which is called Printers Estimating Costing and Scheduling System, was continuously violated. Which means you have a system wherein you input data and this data will short-circuit the process and they'll have their own information inserted in the process. But key to this investigation, there were two tenders, which we refer as Alpha and Beta. We have decided to close this precisely because the process is still ongoing. And on this SDK, Alpha, there was an excessive procurement. And according to GOBOT, 16 random samples between April 2003 and 2004 December were looked into. And there was an irregular expenditure of 1 million. Therefore, it was very clear there was a violation of delegated authority by the people who were involved, and they were not following the process of tender regulation that was set by the National Treasury. And there was, of course, contravention of Section 45B and C of the PSMA. SDK Beckham. It was a contract that was agreed for printing, but then those who were in the position of management decided to include one component which was not in the tender condition of including distribution, thus inflating the whole tender process. Distribution was not done according to the standard acquisition policy and procedures, and therefore there was irregular expenditure of approximately 40 million. Minutes and contracts of this particular SDK are missing. And therefore, it is very clear there was a violation of delegated authority because those who were doing the procurement processes did not follow the due process of the law. And also, it's in contravention of Section 45B and PFMA condition. Still dealing with this, Chair, I would like to have stop here and go to another slide with your permission. So to give us a sense as to the magnitude of the problem, of this tender. When we say there was an excessive procurement of steam power, we want to illustrate to the committee members the magnitude of this problem. On the screen there you see a paper that has been writing for a number of years, and then you see rings of paper that have been sitting for a number of years under unhealthy conditions. They were not stored in what you might call according to warehousing procedures. All this paper was excessive procurement. You can see they have accumulated dated written that do not count. You can see if you do a close up on some of the paper here that it has been sitting for a number of years, you could see that humidity was eating this paper. And the two dots, they indicate that this paper has been sitting in the warehouse for 2 years. It's bundles and bundles of paper. That's also paper that was sitting in the warehouse. That was for a year, 2 years again, same paper. You can see side by side the same paper here, 1 year. And on the side, the same type of specification of paper in 2 years. So there was over-procurement of paper, and we shall explain this. And then paper sitting under unsafe conditions, dust accumulating, which means it had an impact on the machine when you take this type of paper. And then, of course, there were non-compliance with HSE health and safety regulations. You see oil, petrol, and you see gas in the same facility. So which means we have a potential situation of an explosion taking place in that environment. And no fire extinguishers that were supposed to be there, you see it's open, there's gas. This is the warehouse where we keep paper. Now you can see the high level of mismanagement. This paper has been sitting for the past 5 to 6 years. And this paper here also for a long period. And the most count is GP Wolf. When I came to the institution, I should think about 10 days, I was told that we don't have this paper. And I took it upon myself to buy another consignment of this paper, unaware of the fact that we have this consignment in the warehouse. So there was a wasteful expenditure, procurement of the paper that is in the warehouse. What it means, therefore, committee members, is that supply chain management was not talking to management, and therefore there was no line of accountability. So this is the paper that has been sitting in the warehouse. That was the previous CFO, And all the people will come to taking evidence. And best people also the search manager will doing an audit. You can see paper is being in a very sad state. And all that people sitting in the old house, you can see destroyed paper. And chairperson, if I go back to this presentation, you see we speak of redundant stock. It meant that there was a gross mismanagement of stores, consistent overstocking, which was against the principles of treasury regulation, and we had a situation of late delivery by surprise but not penalized, and we had damaged people. So we have graphics and evidence of what was happening here. It's not based on here, so we took photos for this system. And it was very clear also the reasons supplied for overstocking. We were told that there was a latent defect in a picker system with respect to the task at hand, and there were improper calculations for paper needed, human waste, consistent errors, no communication between operations and procurement. And we also had a problem of late outsourcing of jobs, paper nevertheless procured. Urgent jobs not reflected in papers, and the system was circumvented. Chairperson, committee members, procurement of paper was not in accordance with supply chain management principles. There was a huge significant difference between the annual financial statement and figures. 2002-2003, raw materials according to our AFS was 26 million, but according to figures was 40 million. For 2003-2004, 23 and 35. 2004-2005, 23 and 29. In order for us to be able to have a sense as to the gravity of the problem, I therefore took it upon myself to call the SIU to confirm a number of findings that were done by Kubota. They confirmed in a separate report that what Kubota gave us was the status of what was happening within GPW, but they could not confirm the accuracy and the validity of the inventory reflected in the annual report because some of the documents could not be found. But nevertheless, there was a controversy and concurrence between the two institutions. Now, it was very clear that there was a contravention and violation of the PFMA. There was also a violation of security and maintenance of security documents. And there was a clear lack of controls within the procurement division, which means in the supply chain management unit. What has happened, therefore, was suspended a number of people. And there are some people whose investigation has been extended beyond what the Kubota report has given us. We're therefore investigating the previous leadership because these things could not have happened in a vacuum. And therefore, for reasons of completeness of this process, I've elected not to mention the names because the process is still unfolding. Now, what are the measures that they've proposed? Both Kubota and the SIU propose that disciplinary measures be instituted. That charge sheet should be issued to several individuals because of gross mismanagement, there was violation of duty, violation of tender procedures, lack of duly delegated authority of any good, and actions were unscrupulous, violation of PFMA, and the total irregular expenditure is 66 million. Now, the smaller points that I've mentioned, that chair and committee members of irregular expenditure, those refer to officials which were given tasks which were not, they had not delegated authority on, and they spent that amount of money. And the two people have been since been given charges, and the process is taking place. And some of the people were signed on a replacement of paper without written delegation. We have been therefore been advised that charges, they should be charged according to the PFMA, and also we should look at the possibility of criminal and civil charges for the people who are involved in this process. I'd like to report, as we speak, that we have a legal team at our place looking at this issue. It's not easy, and therefore we don't want to do to rush into a decision before we are able to have all our facts in a row. This is a very difficult situation, but it seems like it has given new management an ability to look at these processes, that we need to have procedures into place for us to be able to deal with this matter. So we are not, we don't have a solution at this point, but we do understand what needs to happen. This is the situation at GPW. But we are glad to announce that both ourselves and Freedom's Interpretation Report see these problems as problems that affect management's performance and are a drag in terms of moving forward, and therefore would like to speedily deal with this matter expeditiously. Suffice to say that the Department of Home Affairs, the Deputy Minister and the Minister are continuously kept abreast of the developments within our chicken. Thank you very much.
Don't go outside because we're going to propose many changes today. That's Home Affairs. Not us.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for his presentation. I think it's good that the proposals and scorpions. My question is, in terms of your present process, is there any legal proceeding in terms of civil or criminal against former management people? If there is, well, what is the status of that? How many involved and if there are civil cases? And then what other steps are you taking to ensure in terms of your risk control environment? Is there new software programs being installed? Even though you stop control and report to management, what are you doing proactively to ensure that we don't see pictures like that appearing again?
Just an intimate addition, most of this paper that I signed, I know that you have been dealing with a number of problems of IDPs that are not being treated by UPW. Some of us have been at GPW and you have seen how you've put in place, you know, the security measures in place to do that movement of paper. Now that there are so much huge paper stock and there are these problems of ID books that are running all over the country, it may be maybe one reason that this paper is finding its way outside the warehouse and put a manufacturing their own documents outside. There's quite a number of documents that are not what's going on. It's just an addition to what the Friedman said.
And
does this
mean
Kosi? And then Sandy will come in, Babu's confiner, and the last person will come in, the last Babu will be there. And then I pull up my name to get a shop. Japanese. No, sorry. All right. Thank you. Imagine you want to.
No.
Okay, well, welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on our side, it's going to be difficult because the presenter, 99% of what he has said, the matter is still subject to gain, Chairperson. We are not going to be able to debate in details. But in principle, Chairperson, I just want to find out other findings, because it's black here, the only
Thanks, Chairperson. Okay. My question is on page 5, under finding security of records. Now, what records are we talking about here? Are we talking about internal records, documentation for the running of your department, or would it be documents, security documents? My second question follows on from the Chairperson. In terms of now getting rid of the excess paper, you've obviously done an audit of what the excess paper is. It is unusable and you're going to get rid of it. What method are you using to destroy the paper? In other words, are you shredding it or burning it? And in that batch, have you been able to analyze or identify whether they are like ID documents, paper and passport paper, and what are you doing to ensure that it's not being used? Oh, and my last question, has this report been presented to the minister, and what is the reaction, the department's reaction?
Thank you, Chair. Well, as Kosi has said, very well, the matter is still subjudicated. There's very little that we can say on this thing. What do this writing mean, do not count? Really, what does it mean? Does it really mean that it's a waste? Or, as public work, somebody else will have to count it? But the other question is... do not come. Oh, government printing work. Okay. Yeah. Thank you for the correction. Yeah. Thank you. Also because of the storage. Do we then say this situation prevail in this particular storage? Are we then saying all these other storages that we know of in the Transkei, in Kudaswana and Cape Town? What is the situation? Because of our intention, former. Our intention was to bring government printing under one roof. So are we then saying that is the situation prevails in a particular area and then does not prevail in a particular area? Or did we be able to can take all the resources that belongs to government printing work under one roof at this point in time? Thank you.
That cannot be delegated to junior officials who were doing a day-to-day work. It was then felt by myself, the Deputy Minister, that we extend the whole issue because it could not have happened in a vacuum. Somebody should have known that these things are happening. Paper could not have been procured without the signature of those who were in the high position. And therefore, the mandate was to extend and also investigate those who were then leading GPW at the time. As you rightly say, of course, it's sub judice, and therefore we don't want to release this information in the public domain. Behind the scenes, investigation is happening, and the legal profession is helping us as to how best to deal with this matter. But But it's very clear for all of us sitting here that this decision to buy paper at this level, huge amount of money, somebody has to sign off. The simple clerk or procurement officer were doing that on the mandate of somebody. And also to make things much worse, that they have what you call daily operations meetings, where decisions are taken that we want this type of paper at this tonnage, and therefore that is cascaded to junior officials to take decisions. So therefore, there's a line of accountability in the process. And therefore, I would like to indicate that, yes, we are looking at that process. Now, whether we have taken steps in the current management to mitigate the risk, yes, we have a risk management that has been put into place through our audit team, internal audit team. We have done a risk assessment of the organization, the problems that we might encounter and how to mitigate the risk with respect to some of these issues. So we do have in that perspective. Now, with respect to IT, yes, we're battling with that program, and it's an ongoing process because, as I indicated, the PICAS system is a unique system that exists in this type of business where you have a manufacturing and administration, finance and human resource marketing. So the system that was put in place around 1995, somebody, I was told, and around 2002, said the process should be streamlined to meet his requirement. So it was tailor-made and therefore does not talk to the whole organization. We want to have a dashboard type of reports where in management can look at specific issues within the organization with a view to understand the whole picture within GPL. Those measures are being taken. We have an IT committee dealing with this thing. We have a CETA also assisting us. Now, with respect to the same question was raised by member of the committee, Sandy, the access paper. The paper that we have seen being put on the screen here is some 90%, 99% is not high security, it's meant for general printing, and therefore it doesn't constitute a violation in terms of a security within the organization. What we have done, therefore, we've taken photographs of this paper. We cannot keep this paper for too long. It has to be sold, and therefore we have taken a decision as management to resell this paper to the mill to recover the cost. But obviously, if you look at the age of that paper, we have lost a significant portion in terms of selling it at a good value. And therefore, we will see a situation where we cannot recover the total cost of expenditure. Now, in that respect, I would like to indicate that none of this paper that we have identified here is used for our passport and ID or face value document. We have done a thorough analysis of the paper. So therefore, the security is not compromised. I can assure the committee sitting here.
Before we go to the next question, that I'm now at the same time dealing with your annual report. You know, given the issue of the paper and the yellow code of
conduct. Chair, I would like to report, and I should think in our annual report we indicated that
members of the committee have been raising this issue of using the whole assembly.
With respect to security, first and foremost, we're working with our strategic partners in the country for the advancement of the technology of this country with SAPI to procure and produce for the first time in the continent of Africa paper that will print passports for country ID and also for the continent. This has been presented to the class of ministers and they have approved this venture. We are as a country showcasing our capability that we have what it takes. We are producing as a country high security paper. On the second issue which Chair you are asking on the question of coat of arms, would like to report once again that in collaboration with the government communication information systems, the new coat of arms, in terms of compliance, in terms of government identity, we have received a go-ahead, and I reported in our annual report that we shall be printing new coat of arms in the new passport in this current financial year. And that takes care of the concerns of the committee and the people of South Africa using the old coat of arms. That has been dealt with where the sign off. The minister also has given a go-ahead sign off on this issue. Now, what might be asked here is to why do we continue? The minister has to communicate with yourselves, the cabinet, as to a specific date. We cannot just, in accordance to international best practice, print the passport today. And we have to inform all stakeholders in the world that on this particular day, the new South African passport will have these features. It's an international condition, and therefore the minister will announce to yourselves and cabinet as when that date will be. But most importantly, we need also to take cognizance that we have stock of the old coat of arms. We often need also to be given a go-ahead to scrap that paper, and it's at a cost. So that when we come to yourself, we say we have already written off this amount of paper. It should not come as a surprise, because we shall have been given a green light by yourself that yes, for the benefit of the country, for the good image of this country, it is important to have this new coat of arms. There is a cost into it. And therefore, that shall be announced by the minister when she appropriately informs all the stakeholders. Yes, Chairperson, we have, in principle, we have already dealt with all these issues. We have the Floyd block for the new coat of arms. Had I known, I would have brought a specimen copy of a passport with a new coat of arms inside and outside. So those issues have been dealt with. We can safely say, when the minister gives a signal, we'll print that passport to them.
As much as you want to do the passport, it's important to give you the ID source. Because it's still very easy for one to access the ID. You know, I think one of the things that was needed, the late registration. The police, I know that the NC is going to police conference and we need to respect some of this. The issue of the late registration, I'm raising it just now, just a general understanding for members to get it's another level. You know? It's creating problems. There are so many people who are hiring across the nation and very difficult with the late registration, the issue of the good letter. And after dealing with this issue, just reminded me, the best certificate, the security on the best certificate treatment, because it's something that has been very problematic, just to deny to hear from the CEO on that issue. Yes.
Chair, without revealing too much, given the genesis of what I said in terms of paper, the new type of paper that we have developed as a country, we don't want to say it will be a panacea for all the problems of this country, but high security measures will be taken into account. One is that besides the paper, there has to be added security features in order for us to do an audit and forensics. We sincerely believe, Chairperson, the committee, that you must bear in mind the whole process of corporatization has at the bottom of it a seamless production under one roof, under one authority, therefore takes the risk of truncated production of documents from one institution to another. You'll recall when we had CETA with us in the last meeting, we indicated there is no forum. But I should think it is important for the peace of mind that one institution reports on this particular item. And therefore, we're moving towards that dispensation. Indeed, if you have a South African ID, it's easy to get any other thing. Passport becomes automatic because you have an ID. But once we can close loop on the distribution of IDs and the acquiring of IDs, birth certificates, how it's done, I should think the war against fraudulent documents would be won. We sincerely believe that once we have the production of these documents under one roof, that problem will be dealt with. We're certainly working towards that objective, and we have to include high security features into it, which some of which we cannot deal with. But we have shown to the minister as to how we want to deal with this aspect, because it's what we call work in progress. And therefore, once we have completed this in conjunction with intelligence and CETA will be able later to provide you with the specifications as to how we see this problem being dealt with. But most importantly, Chair, is we're laughing here that it takes 6 months to get a mail or to get a passport. Once the new system is in place, we believe a new business model will be put in place where in South Africans will have their IDs on demand. There's nothing complicated in that. If you apply for a passport today in the morning, it is possible to get your passport in the afternoon. And therefore, the art of the impossible is that all systems and the mindset that we inculcate in our people. And all of us working towards that objective is achievable. We believe come 2008, 2009, we should be talking a different language, where we can deal with some of the issues which have been a problem for our country, that we as government Trinidad, together with our strategic partners, are able to provide solutions to these issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out from the presenter with regard to violation of labor laws, Chairperson. Are they still putting petrol, diesel, and gas under one roof? So, Chairperson, really, really, really serious issue, Chairperson.
Chair, to be criminal of nature, identify this and continue with the same practice. We took measures immediately, and secondly, that facility has been ring-fenced. Petrol and gas and other inflammables cannot be kept in the same place, otherwise we'll have an explosion. And the first people to go in prison will be the leadership of the organization. So we have dealt with HSE appropriately. Thanks.
Members, this man.
on the EFAS offense for Commissioner. It's a policy issue. But we as management have what you must call beyond the horizon thinking that whatever technologies that we procure, they should be able to provide us with the technologies of the future. So in terms of our equipment replacement program, when we move into that, we'll be buying equipment that we'll be able to do and be passport of the future. But that policy is whether we move from a machine readable passport and e-passport, which is a new trend, the minister will inform us. On the security features, that's an internal issue. We're dealing with it with national intelligence and our colleagues at Home Affairs. So those are the issues that it's more operational and we deal with those. So be rest assured that we're producing a high security document for our country.
Yeah, no, I see that because of our open meetings, that there are certain things that should be told to committee members and there are certain things that they can be told. Therefore, the some point of view that for those meetings and parliament, right? So that all the issues that you are facing that members should be told. So members can be told. Because you are members of parliament, honorable members of parliament. Right? Honorable members of parliament. Those are breaking commissions. You have to now, I understand that you put a wonderful system in place with regard to following up the issues raised. There's a legal team in place. Shoki does not have a legal team in place. Shoki does not get help. Shoki does not get help. What's happening here? Is it biasness or what's happening? Well, what's happening is, no, I just want clarity because the Freedom of Publication came here and they said, you know, we have given our report to the department, there's no action. And I know that we are rushing this thing of corporatization of government. We have to debate the issue of security of our business, not about the fishers, about who's going to be handling our security. I'm talking about the checks, the documents. There are a lot of things that the government should do more in hand. And I was going to give this to the private hands and all of that. You know, we still have to engage. But we engage, these are things that we have noted in the meeting with the minister. We have to raise some of these issues. But nevertheless, yeah, just tell us why are you so prepared with support from Home Affairs and Freedom and Publication? Can you come in?
If I'm there for my colleagues here for Shoki. Okay, on a very serious note, I should think that the challenges facing FPP is that they're dependent on the fiscals and dependent on Home Affairs. We are not dependent on Home Affairs. We generate our own funds. We're a court recovery entity. And therefore, what we need, we inform the minister that financial, we do have financial capabilities. That's the difference, because we are trading entity. We look at our balance sheet, we look at why I performed. If there are things that need to be done, we inform the minister. But with them, it's a different ballgame, because they need to go with a cap in hand, and we can't borrow them. But if we borrow them, the rate of interest is very high. We might charge them interest rate, which is not applicable by law.
With the management, there were things which were raised by the report which we have identified, like the lack of active and efficient steps to collect their. Therefore, related to that one, concerning the issue of this marvelous document which you are coming, which you are speaking about, which also when our securities and alike. You are a mina. Still, the finding here, the report, that proposed disciplinary measures would charge if I come across mismanagement. Where is the problem? The problem is with the things which we have, or it's with the institution itself. Where is the problem?
On that note then, members, what we then do is that we accept the report tabled today, the forensic investigation report, and therefore
I'm not going to ask a new question. I just want to find out with the question that I just raised to say, do we then find this situation in a central place?
The issue of centralization of the CW compared to those fragmented area for the terrorism, that one of those things. And where are we? The entire refractory of the CW, which Mr. Moyan has given his attention.
Yes, Chief, he wants to.
My sincere apology, members of the for the committee. I take a note of this question. You raised two things, in fact. Do not count and strategic sensory production, one entity previously 1% the market. What I showed on the video on do not count is something that we found as why it was written do not count, I cannot understand. Because if something is physically there, it has to be counted. And therefore, that is part of the investigation with respect to the forensics. We have counted. And therefore, somebody has to tell us why it was written not count. So it's a process that is ongoing. So it's with respect to some items within the warehouse where we saw a lot of do not count money, tell me. So we found that happening, and it was a cause for concern. So, but nevertheless, of course, we dealt with that. It was something that was of concern. With respect to centralization, GPW is a centralized entity. All the printing is done at GPW, except for the Cape Town office, which we need to give a reason. When Parliament adopts a policy today and the President signs, it becomes law immediately, and that which has to be gazetted. We have a contract specifically on urgent issues that are propagated by government in Cape Town, which needed to be near the time of it's done here. And that is our contract because it's not high security. We have an oversight to it to see that the text is in accordance to what the President has issued. So it's done here in Cape Town. But all the printing of all security work for the state is done by government printing work centrally. Secondly, the different representations that we have in Mabatu, Liguakom, East London, those are what you call sales offices that represent the interests of GPW in terms of liaising with provincial governments in those areas. Now, we do not have what you call a decentralized system. Everything is done centrally, so there is one authority, one command, and one system.
And mine was just to support you that we adopt the posture.
Progressive posture. I can see that a thinker, you don't have a choice, you're just a man.
Let me
take
care
of my wife. I am the component of the popular committee today. Therefore, for that reason, that the entire component of the ANC is here, can I move for the adoption of the annual report of the government? No, we must be recorded. The report of the policy support, seconder, Mamo Chivere.
Therefore, the report is adopted. The issue of the ongoing forensic investigation within government tribunals, we notice that would be obviously informed on the development as you move forward with your investigation. Once the investigation is not this open investigation, the investigation that would not be found informed before.
There is a proposal of this meeting tomorrow on the feeding and transportation.
further engagement with stakeholders. And then from there, we then have to start to do the thing in terms of that. So, important that all of us are here tomorrow. Committee room 2 9 6. The meeting starts at 10. Who never knows the committee was attending at 10. So, we will see
Thank you.